Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, people, welcome back to the second hour of Blood River Tonight. We have a great guest on. His name is Jonas Nilsson. Jacob told me that he's currently living in Switzerland. He is a movie maker. He's made a documentary about our thesis, about our reason for being here on Blood River is to fight against global white genocide. With hard genocide, we coined the terms hard and soft genocide. It's hard genocide in South Africa right now, about as hard as it can get. And we've told you about what soft genocide is many times in the past. With that, we're going to go over to we're going to invite Mr. Jonas Nilsson on the air. How are you doing tonight, Mr. Nilsson?
No, I'm doing very well, and I'm happy to be on the show.
I'm so glad to hear to get you on. Thankfully, Jacob, as you well know, you know him a lot better than I. You know him. He knows you better than I do. So he got you on tonight. We're really excited about having you on because, South Africa is our. It's the whole thing. That's the reason we started Blood River. If people can go to our website, and our number one object. The reason for this show is to fight against global white genocide, and we've kind of adopted South Africa as our protector. We're the protector of South Africa as much as we can be on this radio show. Our name of our show, Blood River, was named after the river there, the Nkomo River in South Africa. That's presently, to this day, it's named a Blood River. With that, I'm going to shut up. Jacob landed this interview. I'm going to let Jacob drive the rest of this show, and I'll chime in every now and then. Maybe Lee has a question, but primarily Jacob is going to be the man to run this ride shotgun this hour right here. Take it away, Jacob.
Thanks, Eddie. It's good to talk with you again, Jonas. So glad we could get you on the show here. Now, I met you through finding out about this film that you spearheaded and of course are the host and narrator of the Boer Project. But that was the main way I even met you. But beyond that, I haven't had the pleasure yet of getting to know you too well. And I think a lot of our listeners too, just for no other reason, just because the documentary is fairly recent and we don't have the benefit of multi-million-dollar media companies promoting our work. So, I think a lot of us, including myself, don't know you as well as we'd like to. And so perhaps we could start off by you just telling us a little bit about yourself and, your background and all that. And, just enlighten us a little bit about those things.
I started in the Swedish opposition quite early when I was 14, 15 years old, going in high school. I realized that we're starting to get some challenges in what was back then. This was mid-90s, late-90s. Sweden was still quite a homogeneous country, and we had just started with this kind of immigration, and you could not really call it mass immigration really yet, but you could see some tendencies, and being a young adult or a teenager, you suffer the consequences in a different way than what the adult civil society do due to forced integration in the schools. So I woke up quite early to the problems of multiculturalism. And I engaged politically, and I've been an outspoken in the opposition against this shift of demographic ever since. And that's also how I come in contact with South Africa for the first time. As you said, the Boer Project is quite a recent project. We released the first documentary a year ago, and we have released maybe 4 smaller documentaries and around 20 to 30 different interviews. And it's all to display on boerproject.com, where we have published all the material. But I traveled down to South Africa for the first time in 2008 and worked with Eugene Terblanche, then leader for the AWB, with his organization for farm security. He ran a private farm security company called the Brandwach für die Christen Boerfolk. And then I got hands-on experience about the crime problem that the white minority is suffering, especially out in the farmlands. And after that experience, I went back home to Scandinavia, and one of my co-workers in South Africa introduced me to a company that worked with import and export, and I started a filial here in Scandinavia and started to import South African products. And during that process of like a small-time entrepreneur importing South African goods, I also got in contact with the financial life of South Africa. And when I was down there first time, they had problems with farm attacks back then, which they obviously still do. But the financial life of the white minority was still quite good. And I started to see the development with the factory I worked with that was based in Cape Town, that he was starting to get forced to get a black co-owner. He needed to share, the shareholders needed to be a certain percent black owned. And the quotas of the manager and the people on the floor needed to fulfill this qualification that the state put on them. And these were structured within the black economic empowerment. So they also started to strangle out the white minority population financially. And it was this together that when I was talking about these things in Sweden, people had no idea about the situation down there. And the lack of awareness and that the mainstream media quite blatantly refused to cover these issues, I felt it like almost forced upon me to actually start to give the Boer plight a platform to get some international acknowledge of what is actually happened there. And I think it's of extreme significance for us in Europe and also in America, where we are heading for a demographic change, where maybe one day in the future, in the very near future, we will be a white minority in our own country. So maybe it's time for us to ask ourselves what will happen when we are that, and then we can look at other countries where we have a white minority.
Well guys, we've heard the music. We've got to go to a break. Jonas, we'll be right back in just a minute. We have to take this quick commercial break. See you all right back in just a minute.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
TalkRight, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. TalkRight makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download TalkRight today from Google Play or the App Store.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I ask you, what is the KQ? You know, the kosher question. Most Americans will spend their entire lifetime purchasing food from the supermarkets while having no idea that almost every packaged food product on the grocery shelves is certified kosher. Indeed, the kosher question encompasses not only food and religion, but also affects our economics, politics, and our identity. In an effort to promote awareness to the kosher question, developers have published an app for your smartphone that features a database of food products that have not been kosher certified. The Kosher-tified app has prominent advertisement on TPC's homepage, or you can check out its website at thekosherquestion.com. With the cesspool of politics getting even deeper these days, why not leave the swamp and start eating in favor of your own interests? Check out thekosherquestion.com today and download the app.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen. By a friend of Medjugorje, whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, It Ain't Gonna Happen, a book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled M-E-J.com, or call Caritas in the U.S., 205-672-2000, 205-672-2000.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Well, thank you people for hanging on for the show tonight. We were going to go right back to our guest. We have a great friend, a blood brother of mine. He's been to South Africa. His name is Rich. He traveled there, him and his lovely wife, back over the Christmas holidays, and he's personal friends with Simon Roach over there in South Africa. And once again, before I go to his question, I'd like to let you know again, I'd like to reiterate that South Africa is pretty much that's our signature issue here at Blood River Radio. Of course, you know, global white genocide is our issue, but there's no place in the world more dangerous for white people, as everybody knows by now that listens to this show, than South Africa. And we're so grateful we have people like you, Jonas, doing what you've done to try to raise awareness. Now, let me ask you this. Oh, by the way, I was at Charlottesville with Rich and Simon Roach in that bloody day of August of 2017. We were there at the Battle of Charlottesville. Simon Roach was there. I rode to Charlottesville with Simon Roach and Rich and a couple other guys, best guys in the world you've ever seen. And I would like to ask you this question. I'd like to pass you by our dear brother, Rich. He wants to know, what do you think is going to happen in the days leading up to the election in South Africa? On the election, he says it's going to be May 8th. What do you think is going to happen over there?
That's a very hard question because South Africa, it's the country of total chaotic anarchy in its places where. You really have the mob rule of the township, and it's a very, very strong gang mentality where political leaders like Julius Malema, to mention the one that is like in the forefront of it, can really like fire up the masses and create mayhem in its places. So. And at the same time, it's also a country of very much of like some kind of order where it's very safe to come and visit as a tourist and to visit all this beautiful scenery and be quite safe in some aspects. So no, it's such a dynamic and difficult country to guess about. It's like anything can happen, and hopefully it will not be as much violent demonstration as we have seen in the past, but as it seems to be now, it doesn't look that good.
You know, are you familiar with the organization, the Southlanders? Simon Rich, we just are. Do you know Simon Rich? Simon Roach. I'm sorry. I'm sitting here reading notes. Are you aware of the guy named Simon Roach? He's a member of Southlanders over there in South Africa. He's the fellow that
I met Simon Roach. He's a nice guy, and I think they're doing a great work within the Southlanders. I got a couple of friends who are members in the Southlanders as well, and. Okay.
You interviewed him in the film, didn't you, Jonas?
Yeah, that's right. He's in the film as well. Hmm. And what they are doing is, when you don't know the outcome of the situation, you need to prepare for the worst. And that's what they're doing. They're getting prepared to not rely on the state for their own safety, which would be madness regarding of like what kind of failed state it really is.
You know, just to go back.
Go ahead, Eddie.
Oh, I was just going to say, before I go to Jacob, I was going to go back. I'm kind of proud of the fact, I was going to tell Jonas, I'm very proud of the fact that the five of us, and I consider Rich part of the, he's an honorary member of our staff, five of us were in Charlottesville with Simon Roach. We were there that day. Matt Goodwin, Jacob, if you know too well, Rich Hamlin, and Gene Andrews. Rich, Gene, and myself, we rode up there with Simon. I just want the people to know that. That's one of the things I'm very proud of. That's the battle I was involved in. It was tough, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. But listen, I'm going to go back with that. I'm going to go back to Jacob right now and let him pick up where I left off and pick up where we all left off. Go ahead, Jacob.
Thanks, Eddie. I guess just piggybacking off of Richard's question for a moment, you know, even here stateside, you know, a lot of folks already like to talk like, oh, well, you know, there's no point in even getting involved in grassroots politics. And, you know, they'll talk like because of the things we're dealing with here in the States, it's already beyond pointless to get involved in politics. And of course, like you were pointing out earlier, Jonas, you know, this what's going on over there is of keen interest to all of us in the West, because anyone with even a, you know, room temperature IQ recognizes the prototype principle and that it applies very much in spades to South Africa. So, you know, for the people that you know say, oh well, you know, we're well past you know, needing to get involved in local politics and stuff like that, I would point out to them, you know, well, look at what's going on over in South Africa. Everyone acknowledges that the anti-white agenda is progressed by a good decade or two beyond what we're looking at, you know, here in America, and probably even what we're looking at in Europe, even though I'd say you guys in Europe have it a lot worse than we have it here in the States right now. So from the research you did, from the journalistic work you've been doing for many years now, so I understand you have a background in journalism, and from your work on the Boer Project, you know, do you think personally, and feel free to be vague on this if you need to for the sake of prudence and whatnot, but I'm just curious what your take is as someone who's already been over there and done extensive interviews on it. Do you think there's much, do you think that a election going in the favor, even in a small way, of our kinsmen that are over there, do you think that has much potential to forestall the very dramatic developments that we're all anticipating and watching over there?
Unfortunately not. I don't think so. But I think the biggest lesson that we can take from the South African case, and this I actually learned myself quite recently during this past year, working in South Africa, and interviewed lots of people that also were involved in the politics in the mid 80s all the way to present day. And that is that the white minority handed over the country to the black majority rule under certain pretexts. And these pretexts, I think, is very important for the constitutionalists in America to understand. And those pretexts were that the South African constitution were to be respected. They had the negotiation with the ANC before they handed over the power, and they agreed upon a constitution that would not be amended. And that is the very same constitution that they are now changing so they can expropriate land without compensation. And that is white farmlands to give to the black population. So what it means is that the constitution is ink on paper if the ruling group that sits on the power wishes otherwise. And the reason why they do it, the changes now and not back in the mid-90s when they seized power, was that the white minority in the mid-90s were still a force to be reckoned with. They were well-organized, they were well-armed. And now, 25 years, 30 years later, they are just a minority amongst others and not able to really defend themselves. So now is the time to change the constitution. And I think it's you need to be very, very naive if you're a white American and you're becoming a minority in your own country, that you think that the rule of law that you know will protect you in that instance. And the same goes with all over in Europe.
We hear the music come up, Jonas. We will be right back. This is a fascinating interview. I'm sitting here kind of spellbound myself. Like I said, South Africa is our signature issue here at Blood River. People, hang on to your seats. We'll be right back.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Robin Walensky.
President Trump sending more troops to the U.S.-Mexico border and is considering a plan to release illegal aliens into sanctuary cities like San Francisco, where House Speaker Nancy Pelosi lives. President Trump tweeting a video of Minnesota Congresswoman Democrat Ilhan Omar making her statement that some people did something on 9/11. She never mentions radical Islamic terrorists. Now, edited into this video, actual footage from the terrorist attack 17 and a half years ago.
CARE was founded after 9/11 because they recognized that some people did something.
Right, oh, there's another one. Another plane just hit.
Some people did something.
Oh my goodness, there is smoke pouring out the Pentagon.
Some people did something.
And President Trump tweeting above the video in all caps, "We will never forget." You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn Root, the Capitalist Evangelist. I'm here to introduce you to a special company with the potential to be one of the great all-American stories. Fortum Resources is a publicly traded, diversified natural resource company with oil, gas, and mining properties in North America and internationally. Fortum is led by Chairman Mark Bruner, the legendary oil man who built Ultra Petroleum from a 15-cent stock to $200 per share, creating $15 billion in shareholder profits. Mark has 30 years of experience in the oil and gas industry, overseeing contracts with Halliburton, ExxonMobil, and Hess. Fortum has over 350,000 acres of oil and gas resources, and more than half the acreage has been evaluated by world-renowned auditors Deloitte Touche. Fortum also owns the rights to the 180-square-mile City of Gold mining property. Fortum is traded on two global exchanges, U.S. ticker symbol FTMR. Repeat, FTMR. This is a rare ground floor opportunity to capitalize on a proven energy industry legend. Please visit FortumResources.com. That's Fortum, F-O-R-T-E-M, Resources.com.
Vice President Mike Pence says his boss, no fan of the WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, USA Radio's Rick Vincent reports.
Vice President Mike Pence slams Julian Assange, the WikiLeaks founder who was arrested at the Ecuadorian embassy and in an interview with CNN denied that President Trump's previously professed support of WikiLeaks was any endorsement of Assange.
The president always, as you and the media do, always welcomes information, but that was in no way an endorsement. We now understand was involved in disseminating classified information by the United States of America.
The vice president says the Justice Department is now seeking extradition, and we're going to bring Julian Assange to justice for being involved in one of the greatest compromises of classified information in American history. For USA Radio News, I'm Rick Vincent.
The CDC says the E. coli outbreak linked to ground beef. More than 100 people in six states sick, including Georgia, Kentucky, Indiana, Ohio, Tennessee, and Virginia. This is USA Radio News.
Well, people, you heard me say it once before, probably 100 times before. My day has already been made. I wouldn't trade places with anybody right now, even though we've had a horrible week. I told you about the week with my wife, that's what we're going through here. But I think we're doing God's work here. And I'm telling you what, I'm just continually to be amazed at the guests that we're getting in here. Thanks, thankfully, Jonas is I don't know how we landed him, but we did, you know, with Jacob knowing him and everything. But I've just got a comment to make, and then I'm going to ask Jonas a question. You know, and I've said this before, hope people aren't tired of me saying this. You know, the great George Washington in infamous Mao Zedong said the same thing. George Washington was more eloquent with his. Mao Zedong said that in reference to what Jonas said about the South African Constitution. Mao Zedong said that law/government, all government comes at the end of a gun barrel. George Washington said this pretty much the same thing when he said that, you know, that government, like fire, makes a dangerous servant a cruel master. It's neither reason nor eloquence, and that that's just the way things are. That's not the whole thing he said, but I'm boiling it down. So, Jonas is right. You know, I don't think law, you know, the Constitution, like to paraphrase what President Bush said, he said it was a GD piece of paper. I hate to agree with Bush, but he's right. It's just a piece of paper. The Constitution is no better than the people. The people have to back up law and order, or it's no good. And that's what Jonas said. That Constitution is not going to stop those black savages from coming in there and butchering those white people. It doesn't stop them from doing it here in Memphis, Tennessee. So with that, Jonas, before we go back to Jacob, Jonas, how bad is the bloodshed going to get within the next the 2 years? You know, the South African leaders over there, the black leaders, have said that there is going to be white genocide. They're going to genocide the South Africans, the Voortrekkers out, the Afrikaners. They're going to kill them all. But just maybe within 2 years, maybe not today, but within 2 years. How true is that, Jonas?
I don't dare to guess. The situation is bad down there, and it has been bad for the last couple of years. When I look at the statistics, it's kind of the same for the last couple of years, roughly. It's getting worse, but not like escalating really, really much. But the thing that has really escalated over these last years, it's the hate speech and the political ignorance against that hate speech from blacks against whites, with the political leadership of, for instance, Julius Malema in the EFF that is stirring up that hate. And people... especially when you refer to Julius Malema and the EFF here in Europe and Sweden, they disregard them as extremists. Like, no, but they are not the party in power and they don't have any influence within the politics. And that is so, so wrong. Julius Malema is the former ANC youth chairman. He left the ANC because he thought they were a little bit too soft on these questions. And that's why he started the EFF. But it was Julius Malema that put forward in the parliament for this constitutional change that ANC voted in favor for. So they are in line with each other politically. And it's also the ruling party of ANC that allow Julius Malema to stir up this kind of hate and the mass rallies and disregard this kind of hate speech that is... going around. So I think what's really getting worse, it's how people are talking. And that's not just from the political leaders. It's within the college campuses. You see it around the townships. Just that vibe of hatred from blacks against whites.
You know, so, one more question, and I'm going to go right back to Jacob. Oh, well, that's sad. That's sad. Now, I've lived here in Memphis all my life. We are a predominantly black population. And just for lack of a better way to say it, I'm just going to say it the way you see it in the street. We have a large percentage of the blacks are pretty much of savage mentality here in Memphis. I've lived it all my life. I've lived there very dangerous. They have a tribe mentality, a gang mentality, like a pack of wolves, you know. Okay, that being said, I know the blacks in South Africa have to be at least equal to or greater than in their savagery than our blacks here in America, who, you know, ours have been watered down some with white blood. Okay, now, Mr. Jonas,
I can just comment on that before you ask the questions.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
There is lots of Afro-American, black people from the United States that goes to South Africa and rest of Africa to discover their roots. And they arrive and they see all these blacks in Africa and they can't relate to them because blacks in America, because of some kind of mixture that they are not 100% blacks, or because they have been civilized within our customs in completely different ways that have happened in Africa. So they come to discover their roots, but they can't relate to those roots because of that savagery, indifference, which you pointed out or reflected about. So to answer that, the savagery in Africa is way beyond the savagery you see amongst the black demographic in America.
Well, then that said, then you pretty much answered my question. Then when things get out of control, then even the more moderate black leaders, and I'm asking this as a rhetorical question, even the more moderate black leaders there are not going to be able to control the out of control, the just the over off the scale bloodlust, the slaughter by these, when I say rank and file blacks in the street. Is that true? Would you agree with that?
Yes, but not because of that, really. You have some good black moderate leaders that are reasonable. But what's happening when these blacks in South Africa is rioting, and this goes way back, even as far as they have been living within our kind of society and civilization. And that is when they go out and riot. They assemble the troops in the township. So they are literally knocking on the doors and dragging people with them. And the blacks that don't want to riot, they get a tire around their neck and get mobbed, executed, because they're not part of the vibe, so to speak. So it's very, very dangerous for blacks not to join these riots themselves, and they are living in this very environment, and there are lots of them that are forced to go with and take part in this big demonstration and the big riots. So they work
to you, Jack.
Intimidation in a different way that we can understand, that comes from a different part of the world that haven't really dealt with that kind of thing. And that's also the problem when we go back to the 80s and early 90s, or even the 70s, when we in Sweden aided the ANC against the white minority government, is that we just theoreticized about their problem. The white South African were practical in their solution of how to deal with this demographic challenge that they had. And we that aided the ANC were just thinking that, okay, you should give each man a vote because it's right to do so, and because it's no difference between the different kind of demographic, then it shouldn't really matter. But obviously it does matter.
Well, I tell you what, I'm not very optimistic myself, but thank you so much for that. I mean, let's go back to Jacob now. I don't want to hog up this. After all, he's the one that got this interview. Go ahead. Back to you, Jacob, son.
No, it's great stuff, Eddie. And you know, so to reiterate this here for folks, you know, for whom this might not have sunk in yet, what Jonas is talking about, what Eddie's talking about, you know, yeah, sure, we've got plenty of very reasonable, moderate black folks here in America that are, you know, very intelligent people and you know, they're a credit to their community. But just let this sink in for a minute here, what Jonas is talking about. You know, when the frenzy is whipped up and the bloodlust is at its peak, you know, these people are going door to door recruiting more people to join them. And the ANC, oh, there's the music for break.
People, we'll be right back with this is one hell of an interview. We'll be right back. Hold on to your seats. You can't afford to miss a minute of this interview.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody ever having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped-up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Well, people, if you've been here in Memphis, June, I think it was 2 years ago, could be 3 years ago, our brother Rich just reminded me, Jonas, we have a bridge here before we go back to Jacob. We have a major, major, major artery. We have the Interstate 40. It runs, I guess, about 2,000 miles or more. It goes all the way from the east eastern part of the United States all the way to the West Coast. That's I-40, Interstate 40. It's a huge, huge artery. We have two bridges, one where Interstate 55 crosses the Mississippi River, the largest river here in the United States. We have I-40 bridge. They hook up together on the west side of the river, which is in Arkansas. Back in June, I'll say 2 years ago, two, three years ago, it was a night of horror. We had a Black Lives Matter. They organized just on the spot, and within an hour, 2 hours at the max, they were organized. We had thousands, I'm talking thousands of blacks got on this massive bridge. You'd have to see it to believe it, how huge it is. They shut the entire Memphis-Arkansas bridge down. They shut that sucker down. They were on that bridge and shut it down. And not only, and we have a predominantly black city council here in Memphis. We have a black police chief. We have a black sheriff. And that's why I keep saying, you know, are these blacks in South Africa as rough or rougher than they are here? And you answered that question. But not only was there no law that tried to disperse that mob of animals, the city sent out air conditioning buses for them so they could keep from getting overheated. They had cold water for them. I mean, it was an absolute nightmare. People here in Memphis were wondering, are we getting ready to have a Rwandan genocide that Rich also told me that 25 years ago they had the Rwandan genocide. We were thinking, is that what's going to happen right here? Only will it be white people. With that comment, I've got that comment out of the way. Jacob, back to you. Back to you, Jonas. Take off, Jacob.
Thanks, Eddie. Well, okay, right before we went to the break, we were touching on something that I think is a really, really, really central point here for everyone to keep in mind, regardless of where they fall in the consideration of this issue. Because especially for those people of whom it can be said, they're still very much not even on the fence. They have this standoffish attitude. I take that back. If it were only standoffish, it wouldn't bother me so much. They have this sneering disdain for the notion that there's a plight, there's a white plight, you know, in South Africa. And we talk about white flight and the concurrent brain drain and stuff like that as a result of the problems that we're seeing in South Africa right now. But what the South African people are dealing with is very much white plight, you know, and a lot of people in America today and in the West just, you know, they do not understand this. They're completely out to lunch on it. They're not watching this situation intently like we here are on this program and like the listeners of Blood River Radio are doing, noting that, man, this is, you know, what happens here bodes ill or bodes well for all of us, you know, depending on how events play out. So, and it bodes well in the sense of, you know, if God miraculously intervenes and you know, things start to go better for the people of South Africa, then that bodes well for us. But given the way things are going, whatever happens there bodes ill for the rest of us. And it's a case in point of how our complacency could be our own undoing ultimately. So, you know, and this thing that Jonas was touching on, he mentioned in the response he was giving to your question, Eddie, dealing with the moderates here in America, the many very fine intellectual American blacks, you know, like James David Manning and Jesse Lee Peterson and Larry Elder and Thomas Sowell and, you know, the number of others, Alan Keyes, you know, I can just off the top of my head, I can rattle off several moderate blacks, even very conservative blacks who are very much a credit to their community and are voices of reason amidst a cacophony of, you know, anti-white propaganda. But what Jonas was touching on earlier is so significant. This is the thing I'm talking about here that everyone needs to keep in mind. In South Africa, earlier on, you know, when the ANC was taking over, this organization that favored this barbaric, torturous mode of execution called necklacing, which Winnie Mandela, you know, spoke about in this infamous quote of hers where she was, you know, speaking very favorably of it. And, you know, this woman that pastors in America laud and, oh, she's such a picture of principled womanhood and da-da-da-da-da. And there's this infamous quote from this woman where she's talking about how with their necklaces they'll change the face of Africa. Okay, so the moderates. Jonas was talking about how the moderates in South Africa, the people that wouldn't join the frenzied, bloodthirsty mob, you know, and their door-to-door recruitments, you know, they're the sort that gets necklaced, all right? And you know, God forbid that sort of thing happen to anybody here. We're just saying that's a very important point to keep in mind. When things, you know, when the script is flipped and ethnic, I mean, just like unambiguous, undiluted ethnic bigotry, hatred, and malevolence of the on the scale that we're talking about is at a fever pitch, the moderates are going to be powerless to stop them. The conservatives are going to be powerless to stop them because it's beyond that point already. And that's just such an important thing to keep in mind. So I think a lot of folks kind of fall back on this notion of, well, yeah, but, you know, there's a lot of really intelligent, productive black people. And I'm sure they're a guiding light to the black community out there. So that was just, I'll say all that to say, that was a very important point you were raising there, Jonas, when you were answering Eddie's question, pointing out that the moderates are often, you know, were in South Africa's history, were the sorts who would get necklaced, you know, the people that wouldn't go along with the mob. And with that being said, you know, we're running out of time here in the program, and my, how the time does fly. We could go on about this for quite a while, and hopefully I'm not.
Jacob, before you run out of time, if you will, Jacob, before we run out of time, tell the audience what a necklace is, or let Jonas tell the audience what a necklace is, and he can respond to your commentary, which was excellent commentary. Jonas, tell the audience, please, what is a necklace? And I know all too well what it is, and respond to Jacob.
Yeah, it's, as Jacob said, that Winnie Mandela, their wife, of Nelson Mandela, and I think it's really important to actually acknowledge that it says something about the character of what kind of wife one chooses, because people usually separate them. To Winnie Mandela made necklacing infamous. Now I'm paraphrasing, but she said something in style with that, with matches and tires, we're going to liberate this country. Referring to the execution method of necklacing. And that was an execution method that was targeting against other blacks. So it's when they kill white people, they torture them and they kill them, rape them, kill them. They use torture and execution to blacks as well. But then they normally use this execution method of necklacing, which is taking a tire, fill it with petrol, put it over the person's head as a necklace, and they lit it on fire, and the victim burned to death. It's a horrible thing to see.
Just can you think about the liquid rubber running down a person's body? I mean, that's an animal wouldn't do that. I'm glad you brought that up, Jacob, and I'm glad you told about that. Well, people, we've got about 2.5 minutes left. Lee, do you have any questions for your guest?
No.
Okay, Jacob, I'm going to go back to you, son. Go back and anything you have to say to Jonas.
Okay. Well, thank you, Eddie. Well, folks, suffice it to say, Jonas and anyone who's doing work like him out there cannot be commended enough for the effort they're making to raise awareness about this issue. It is the nature of darkness that, you know, it only exists in the absence of light. And, you know, we have Rudy on sometimes. Rudy Davis is a good friend of ours from, you know, during the Hovindication campaign where we were advocating for Kent Hovind, and, you know, of course, Rudy continues to do his excellent work with political prisoners. The slogan we were using was shine light and make noise. And you'll hear Rudy say that all the time. You know, we coined that and kind of popularized that a little bit during that campaign. And Jonas is shining light. And he's making noise. And there's, you know, thank God there's been an explosion lately. And I'm not exaggerating there when I say an explosion of information being put out. There's been three that I'm aware of, very professionally done documentaries that have come out in close proximity to each other. There's Jonas's excellent film, of course, The Boer Project, which all of you, if you haven't seen it yet, go watch it. If you haven't, if you've already watched it, go watch it again, refresh your memory on it, share it on YouTube. He's got it up there for free on YouTube where you can watch it at no cost to you. And plans are even afoot, if I'm not behind on the times there, Jonas, to get a hard copy of it out at some point. And but you know, there's, you can watch it for free online. Go check out
almost out of time, Jacob. I'm just reminding you, we're almost out of time, so
okay. There's been, his is one of a couple other or three other excellent films that have come out recently on it. This issue is getting exposed. It is seeing the light of day. And there's never, you know, there's always still time to do battle before the sun goes down. So, Jonas, we commend you for the efforts that you're doing, and we hope to have you on some more.
Yes, thank you so much for being on tonight, Jonas. And we intend to have him back. By the way, Rich said that Jonas made the best video he's ever seen made by a foreigner. People, on behalf of me, Jacob, Matt, Sam, Lee, all the crew, Gene, thank you so much. We thank you very much for tuning in and listening to our show. We will hopefully, Lord willing, we will see you at the same time next week. Thank you very, very much. And I hope you have a happy Easter in case I don't live to see it myself. Good night, everyone. Good night, all.